We are studying Parashat Korach. Parashat Korach is the episode in the Torah where we read about the mutiny that Korach and his cohorts came against Moshe Rabbeinu, claiming that Moshe Rabbeinu was a nepotist. They claimed that he installed his brother as Kohen Gadol on his own. He himself took the leadership. He installed a tribal leader, Elitzafan ben Oziel, and therefore Korach had some claims about the way Moshe Rabbeinu was leading the nation. It's a classic machloket, so classic that the Mishnah in Masechet Avot, when it defines the different types of machlokot that exist, the different type of disputes that exist, the Mishnah basically says there's two types of machlokot, there's two types of disputes. You could put every machloket into one of two categories. There's a machloket l'shem shamayim, and there's a machloket shelo l'shem shamayim. Now you have a machloket that it's for the right reasons. Everybody is purely intended, everybody has the right kavanah. They're doing it, you know, in the name of God, it's purely motivated, it's altruistic, it's idealistic. That's called Mahloket L'Shem Shamayim. And the Mishnah gives an example of the classical case of a Mahloket L'Shem Shamayim, Zu Hillel V'Shamay. It's the arguments throughout Shas between Hillel and Shamay. Now the truth is Hillel and Shamay really only argued in three cases. I want you to know that. Yeah, everybody thinks Hillel and Shamay argued on everything. The Gemara only has recorded three machlokot between Hillel and Shammai. The machlokot that you know are Bet Hillel and Bet Shammai. It was the students of Hillel and Shammai that they argued on a lot of subjects. But again, even the students of Hillel and Shammai, was L'Shem Shammayim. Meaning it was for the right reasons. And they were trying to get to the truth. They were trying to get to the bottom line in the halakha. It wasn't personal. They were trying to figure out what is the word of God. And then the Mishnah says, what's the machloket shelo l'shem shamayim? What's the paradigm machloket shelo l'shem shamayim? So the Mishnah says, Korach v'adato. Korach and his cohorts. And we understand that was shelo l'shem shamayim. They were going after kavod. They were going after, glory. And they were looking to, for personal aggrandizement. So we know it wasn't l'shem shamayim. So one of the rabbis, actually a lot of the rabbis that interpret Pirkei Avot, all ask a similar question. The Mishnah, in the way it is written, is not precise in the sense. When you gave me the Machloket L'Shem Shammai, you gave me the two sides. Hillel versus Shammai. That's a Machloket L'Shem Shammai. And what's the Machloket Shelo L'Shem Shammai? The Mishnah should say Korach versus Moshe. Whereas the Mishnah doesn't say this, Korach va'adato. Korach and his group. Yeah, versus, you didn't give me the other side. You just gave me one side of the argument. So the simple explanation that's well known, which I'll offer to you today, then I'll give you the Hiddush. The accepted interpretation is, what's the litmus test to know if the machloket that you're involved in is l'shem shamayim or not? Which means, what's the barometer? How do you measure, if you're involved in a dispute, how do you measure? So there's different yardsticks to measure with. One of them is, in a machloket that's not l'shem shamayim, the disputants themselves, amongst themselves, have different agendas. Which means you can have 10 guys coming against the rabbi. But the 10 guys, each one has a different reason why they're coming against the rabbi. And a lot of them are in conflict with each other. Which means this guy's doing it because he wants to be the president. And this guy's doing it because he wants to be the president. So they themselves have a machloket within. So therefore it's an internal dispute amongst them. So then you know they're not the same shamayim already. Now you know already everybody's trying to advance their agenda. And everybody's trying to advance their, what's in it for them. That's not the same shamayim. So the machloket of Korach v'adato, you don't have to give me the other side of Moshe. The machloket shelo l'shem shamayim is Korach v'adato. Korach and his men, they themselves were the indication that the Ma'alag was Lord Shemeshah, because each guy was in it for something else. Datam v'Abiram are in it, why? This is their revenge against Moshe Rabbeinu from Egypt. So they got their reason. Korach's in it, why? He wants to become the Kohen. You got the other guy, Yehon ben Pelet, he's really got nothing too much to gain, but he's in it for the ride. You got the Sanhedrin in it because they have claims, because they were from the tribe of Reuven, and they have claims that they should be the leader, because Reuven's the oldest tribe. So each guy's arguing for Moshe Rabbeinu, but if you look at their notes, each one's arguing for a different goal. So obviously it was not Lashem Shalom. Hillel and Shammai, on the other hand, had one goal. Both sides was, what is the truth of Torah? And all Hillel's yeshiva had that same goal. They weren't antagonizing Shammai for different reasons. They all had one unified purpose to get to the Emet. That's Mahlukah Hashem Shammai. Hence the Mishnah says, Korach Va'adato. That's already the signal that it was Hashem Shammai, because even him and his guys were involved in a dispute. That's the well-known interpretation. But if you allow me today to say over a hadush that I heard from Rav Shimon Schwab, Zichron Levracha, the way he interprets the Mishnah. He said like this, that another way to discern a machloket l'shem shamayim is when people are disputing each other, but that both sides recognize that there's two sides here. Which means a guy is allowed to have his opinion, and he's allowed to be very vocal with his opinion, and he's allowed to be resolute in his opinion. But if he's L'Shem Shamayim, he recognizes that there's somebody on the other side of the table that doesn't think like he's thinking, that doesn't say what he's saying. And he hears his opinion, and he understands his opinion, and he understands his colleague's opinion in depth with all the proofs and everything, and after he digests it, still he says, I hear you, but I can't agree for whatever reasons. Then already sees the Shem Shammayim, because he's listening to his colleague's opinion. Hillel and Shammai, the Mahlok, it was like that. How do we know? Because the Gemara Pesachim says, when Hillel would get up to discuss the subject matter, he would say, Rabotai, my colleague Shammai holds like this. I, on the other hand, hold the opposite. So you see, Hillel, when he would discuss the Machloket, he would announce the opinion of Shammai first. What does that show? He heard him. Which means, I hear exactly what you're saying. On the other hand, a lot of times when people are arguing, it's one-sided. Which means there could be somebody else trying to say something else, but the fellow is so stubborn on the other side. Not that he's resolute. You're allowed to be resolute. But he's so stubborn that he doesn't even hear that there's somebody else that can have a different shita than him. Somebody else can have a different idea than him. It's like when the guy starts to talk, he's like, listen to what I'm telling you. Hear me out that it's possible to look at this thing from a different angle. No, it's my wife. And I don't want to hear. That's where the Lord Hashem Shammayim. If you're looking for the truth, hear the guy out. Maybe the guy's got some veracity to what he's saying. Maybe the guy's got some hadush that you didn't come through. The mahloket of Korach, how does the Mishnah define it? Korach va'adato. Who was on the other side? Moshe. But that was the problem. In Korach's mind, it was a one-sided argument. Which means when Moshe Rabbeinu came along and said, no, but Korach said, we're not interested. Hear me out! So the mahloket of Korach is Korach va'adato versus nobody in their minds. And that's why it's L'Shem Shammayim. If you'd ask Korach and Adato, give me the two sides of the mahloket. You know what Korach would answer? There's no two sides over here. It's a one-sided argument. But we heard Moshe Rabbeinu saying something. Wait, Moshe Rabbeinu saying nothing. I'm the thing. He's a nepotist. It's a sketch over here. He's taking power. Yeah, but he has a claim. He was saying something. Don't pay no attention to him. You weren't even able to hear your opponent's claims. That's why Shelo L'Shem Shammayim. That's why it says Shelo L'Shem Korach Ba'adato versus no one. Hence, it's Lo L'Shem Shammayim. That's the closed-mindedness that people have during a machloket. It's either their way or it's no way. The lesson of the parasha would be, according to this Mishnah, tolerance to both sides of a machloket. For example, some of the greatest machloket in the Torah world were amongst Gedolei Olam. I'm not talking about over here, you shouldn't misinterpret me. We have a machlok between Orthodox Judaism and conservative Judaism, where you should sit down and say, well, let's hear what they have to say. Of course not. We never talk about that. The way a guy comes along and tells you, I say you could eat pig. Go jump in the lake now. We're not going to have to sit down. Well, let me hear your side. That is tolerance of fools. We're not talking about that tolerance over there. That doesn't even enter. Alav Shalom, Hacham Yaakov Katzin, Zichrono Levracha. One time, one of the conservative leaders somehow penetrated into his office for a meeting. And he guised himself that he's not, he's sitting in the meeting now with the chief rabbi of the community. So the Hakam is sitting there, and now this guy comes along and says, yeah, I'm representing this organization. The rabbi right away sniffed him out that he's from the wrong side of the religion. So in a very, very plain terminology, he tells him, get out of here. So the guy couldn't believe it. The guy says, what do you mean? He's like, we're in a meeting over here. You tell the guy, you know, get out of here. I'm in your office. You know, where's the dialogue? Where's the, you know, did he hit it? You're a rabbi. I'm a rabbi. We have a question. We have a discussion. So the rabbi's genius. What does he do? Finish. You, it's not a mahalokit over here. There's no two sides. You're going to come now to espouse conservatism over here and give me an idea. We're not interested. And he filed them. So we're not talking about that. That's not considered intolerant. We're talking about you have machlokin amongst the gedolim. You had, for example, the Hasidim held one view on a certain subject. You had the Lithuanians held a different view on a certain subject. They would vehemently get up and espouse their opinion. But what? It was Lashem Shamayim in the sense everybody heard their colleague's opinion. And they said, okay, Allah Baruch, I respect you, we understand where you're coming from, but I look at it a little differently. There's a great Hadush of Shlomo Eger. The Gemara says in a different place, Keshem she'en partzufehem domot, kach en de'otehem shavot. The Gemara says, just like two people don't look alike, even identical twins are not truly identical. No two people exactly look alike. So the Gemara says, so two people do not think alike. No two people's brains work in the exact same fashion. Everybody looks at something with a different angle. So the rabbi asked, why couldn't it just tell me that? No two people think alike. Why did it have to give me the mashal? Just like they don't look alike, they don't think alike. So Rav Shlomo Eger explained like this. If somebody doesn't look like you, do you get angry at him? Do you get upset at him? Of course not. He looks like finished. That's his problem. You know, that's his thing. You're going to get upset that God doesn't have brown eyes like you have. If God doesn't have the same complexion, that's the way he looks. So the Mishnah is saying, just like facial appearance doesn't bother you when there's diversity, so it shouldn't bother you as well when a guy doesn't think like you also. It should be the same attitude as the facial expression. The guy doesn't think exactly like you. Okay, am I angry that his nose is not like my nose? So his thinking is a little different. He's mahmir. He says asur. Okay, he says asur. I go with the lenient opinion. I say mutar. Well, I'm going to now get upset at the guy. He wants to be mahmir. He looks at it differently. God bless him. Again, this is all in the realm of Torah, Judaism. Outside the box, of course, that's what we're not talking about. You'd be upset at the guy's facial looks also in that case. In any event, that's the explanation of the Mishnah. But I heard another interpretation which really puts the whole machloket of Korach in the proper perspective. This Chiddush Tovi really, it gives us a new understanding of the complexion of the machloket. The Mishnah is giving us two types of disputes. Machloket l'shem shamayim, Hillel v'shamayim. Machloket shelo l'shem shamayim, Korach v'adato. So one of the rabbis said, what's the connection over here? Which means, Hillel and Shammai is the most noble of arguments. You know, you're giving me a beautiful argument with Hachamim. It was religiously motivated, decent people, good people. And in the same Mishnah, it's like you're telling me, and what's the classic Mahalokah Shalom L'Shem Shamayim? The Hatfields and the McCoys. You're comparing that to Hillel and Shammai? It doesn't belong. Korach doesn't even belong in the Mishnah. It's like saying, we're going to give you the two rivalries now. The good rivalry, L'Shem Shamayim, Hillel and Shammai. The bad rivalry, Yankees-Boston. What are you talking?
This. Now I understand.
I
Which means
that belongs in the Mishnah. I mean, how could you even say in the same breath Hillel and Shammai and Korah v'Adato? It means you're diluting Hillel and Shammai already. They have nothing in common. There's zero connection. You don't have to come and tell me this is the good one and this is the Shiloh Shifter. What are you talking? It's not even close. There's no legitimate connection. So I heard an explanation like this from Rabbeinu Yeruham. I read it in Sif. He says, don't kid yourself. The Mahlokah of Korach v'Adato was not the Hatfields and the McCoys. The Mahloket of Korach v'Adato had all the trappings of a Mahloket l'shem Shamayim. If you were sitting there watching the Mahloket, you would see a guy with a hat, with a beard, with a long coat, coming with claims of what? Religious claims. He didn't come out with his ulterior motive, nepotism and power. Hey Moshe, I want to be a Kohen. Yeah, it's very noble. Why do you want to be a Kohen? I also want to wear the 8 garments of the Kohen. I also want to walk into the Kodesh Kodashim once a year on Kippur. Anything wrong with a guy striving to be something great? Which means, yeah, I'm a Levi. Levi is limited. He can only carry the Mishkan. I want to be in there. I want to bring Korbanot. I want to serve God on a higher level. Hey, if you were watching Korah, you'd say, you know what? This guy's a good guy. Which is, most of us don't fight like that. Most of us don't tell the rabbi, we want more classes, we want to make more shiuri, we want to come in the evening, we want to come. Hey, today, who's you going to tell the rabbi, relax, rabbi. You know, even your classes, if you can cut it down by 15 minutes, we have no argument. You know, we have no, no resentment. Over here, what's Korah saying? Korah's really coming to Moshe, I want to be more religious. I want more opportunities. Listen, Korach knew what the job of a Kohen was. Kohen doesn't have an easy job, by the way. Kohen's got to work in the Beit HaMikdash all day long on a higher level as a Levi. So what is he asking? Give me more responsibilities to serve God. So if you looked at the Machloket, you didn't see gangsters coming out with their rifles like in the Wild West over here and start shooting each other. It wasn't one of those. It was a Machloket that had all the trappings of the Shem Shamayim, of something that was positive of the Shem Shamayim. But the Mishnah tells us there was only one ingredient that was missing, and that was the L'shem Shamayim of it. Korach had ulterior motives. Were it not for the ulterior motives, his machloket would have been exactly Hillel and Shammai. Two rabbis arguing, two ways of looking at it, both trying to get closer to God, but the one ingredient that was missing, which obviously makes the world of difference, that is the intent. And from here you see, Rabotai, the mahloket of Hillel and Shammai and Korach v'Adato were actually parallel mahlokot. They were actually, if you're not going to say they were brothers, they were first cousins. The mahlokot were very similar in nature. Two rabbis in the Bet Midrash, going at it on a religious level. But the Mishnah says the only one nikuda, the one point that was missing in Korach's argument, he wasn't the Shem Shammai, which means he had a gripe. He had an axe to grind. He had a purpose that was motivating him. And you know what? As great as we know Moshe Rabbeinu was, Korach, the rabbis tell us, was a great man. The Zohar says in the Pasuk, Sadiq Katamar Yifrach, the last letters of Sadiq is Kof. Katamar is Resh, Yifrach is Het. That's the Korach. It means the Pasuk and Tehillim refers to Korach, at least eventually he will revert back to being a tzaddik. Listen, Korach couldn't have been a slouch. He was able to muster up 250 rabbis of the Sanhedrin with him. They weren't going with some villain to attack Moshe Rabbeinu. If he was able to, persuade 250 hachamim, he must have had a certain amount of religious clout to him that he was able to muster up such a group. So what was missing? Korach, you were great. You were almost like Hillel and Shammai. You almost were there where you would have went down to become a pure example of Machloket. But you know what happened? In the heart of your heart, which means only the Torah can really psychoanalyze what's in a person's heart, they saw that what was motivating him? Kavod. What was motivating him? Honor. So external, which is, I'm telling you, if we were there, we might not have picked it up.
What do you think? Korah was explicit when he came? You think Korah said, hey, you're an nepotist. We want power. It wasn't like that. It came very, very covered up. It was guys. It was masculine. You would say, you know what? The guy's got a claim. Which is, I'm sure if you were there, there would have been religious guys in our community that would have sided with Korah. They would have said, the truth is, hear him out. Hear the guy out. The guy's going, why should I don't be the Kohen, not him? Make two Kohanim. Let's make a copy. They got the whole, you know, the haki. So therefore, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? The Mishnah says everything's fine. But one angle was missing. You were in the Shem Shemayim. Now look at this, gentlemen. That one small ingredient called the Shem Shemayim, missing it, it's like the bread is exactly the same, but this one's missing yeast. It's not bread anymore. It's finished. Missing the yeast. It's not bread. It doesn't count anymore. The Leshem Shamayim element of a mahloket is the whole key to mahloket. Because if you're missing that element, it's disaster. Which it starts off, looks like it's okay, but the end of it, it's disaster. Look what ended up happening. Already the mahloket spun out so much, where Moshe had been already warned them. And now, their attention started to become a little more explicit. They were warned, if you're going to do this, you're going to get killed. I don't care. Now already it was more defiance. You know, it started off, L'Shem, maybe, but then it turned into defiance. And then look what ended up happening. Why? Because it was known L'Shem Shemayim. So I heard from a rabbi like this. Sometimes it's a mitzvah to make a machloket. To some people, that's the only mitzvah they keep in the Torah, to make machloket. But the point is, in rare cases, sometimes you have to make a little noise. Sometimes the leader must, shake up and make a little tumult a little. L'Shem Shamayim, of course. And every case has to be analyzed when and what and how. But we have a rule by mitzvot. The rule by mitzvot is, Le'olam ya'asok adam betorah u'mitzvot shelo lishma. Shemitok shelo lishma, ba lishma. We have a rule when it comes to mitzvot. You don't have to be purely motivated in your mitzvot performance. As a matter of fact, the Gemara says, in the beginning of your mitzvah career, even do it for the wrong reasons. Just do it. Which means you ask a guy, come to shul Shabbat? He says, yeah, but I'm only coming to shul to socialize.
To have breakfast.
To have breakfast. Yeah, that's probably a better example. And what do the people, what the guy will tell you? I'm coming for the breakfast. What do you tell the guy? Come. But he's telling you, I'm not doing it for God. I'm not doing it for the mitzvah. Come for the, but bottom line, you'll start off for the breakfast. What eventually is going to happen to the person? Eventually he gets into it. The rabbi gives a shiur. He hears a hiddush. The prayer becomes a little important to him. So the breakfast reeled him in. And then already he became the Shem Shemayim. That's what all the mitzvot. You know, we tell the guy, you know, they have some guys that their biggest mitzvah is that before Sukkot, they go to the store and they spend $300 on an etrog. And what they buy an etrog for? They have no idea what the etrog is. But when they walk into Knees, they say, oh, shuf, this etrog. Yes, an etrog. And now he's getting on the camel. Oh, let me see it. He's walking around. He's flaunting it. I'm going to say, look at the pitom. Look at that item. There's no spots on it. Look at the bumps. Look at the shape. What do we tell the guy? If that makes you happy, buy the $300 truck. Yeah, but you're doing it for kavod. Eventually, the guy will mature out of that. And he'll do, maybe, you know, he'll do it l'shem shamayim. The Baal Shem Tov once said, there's a pasuk in Tehillim. The pasuk says, al tevo'eni regel ga'ava. Do not be an arrogant person on the holiday. Al tevo'eni regel ga'ava, rashi tevot etrog. Talking about the guy who comes on the holiday with the etrog, showing off his etrog, being pompous about it. In any event, we tell the guy, you're not l'shem shamayim, don't worry about it. But there's only one mitzvah where we don't let you start off shalom l'shem shamayim and wait till you get l'shem shamayim. And that's mahloket. When it comes to disputing in the name of God, you must start l'shem shamayim. You can't say, I do it for the wrong reason, and eventually get it. By the time you get there, the ground will open up, swallow half the world, there'll be a disaster, a destruction, and now you're going to say, I think I'm the Shem Shamayim now. Yeah, but look at the havoc that was caused until you got to the Shem Shamayim. The only mitzvah that's got to start and finish and end the Shem Shamayim, that's the mitzvah of Machloket. And that was missing in the Machloket of Korach Va'adato. We go a little further in the Perashah. Further in the Perashah, we learn, it is a Ramban, very, very important Ramban in the beginning of the parasha. We'll say it over. I don't have the Ramban in front of me, but I'll paraphrase it outside. The Ramban says like this: why now? Korach, why now did you wake up and start to have claims against Moshe Rabbeinu? The Ramban's theory was this was bothering Korach for a long time. Korach was percolating in the Midbar for many years about the appointment of Elitzafan ben Uziel, the tribal leader. He was stewing about Aharon's appointment. Why now, Korach? What all of a sudden motivated you to make the to bring it to the forum, to bring it to the open? So the Ramban says like this, an amazing thing. He says throughout the sojourn of the Jews in the Midbar, Moshe's ratings were basically high, which means the approval ratings of the people to Moshe were way up. The Ramban says even after the Egel, which is like one of the worst tragedies, if you think about it, relatively speaking, only there were 3,000 casualties, which is not a lot compared to the sin, and Moshe saved the day. And God was planning on destroying the entire nation, and who got up and prayed? Moshe Rabbeinu prayed. He comes down and says, alright fellas, I handle it for you. Moshe Rabbeinu is fantastic. The man's great. We worship Avodah Zarah, and you know, he got us off the hook. So we got the man working, we got the Be'er of Miriam, we got the clouds of glory. Technically, Moshe Rabbeinu, if they would take a poll, he's got 85% approval rating. You can't go against him. How are you going to go against him? It's going to backfire. So Korach had to control his envy, because he says, the Ramban's language is, because had Korach gone after Moshe, they would have stoned him. They would have stoned him to death. What are you doing? There's the man over here. So Korach was a very calculated guy, and he was a very patient guy. He was waiting. He's waiting. And what happens? Last week's parasha, the spies. Spies come back. Spies give a negative report, a malignant report about Eretz Yisrael. The people, you know, get all in a tizzy. They start to cry. God says, that's it. Nobody's going into Eretz Yisrael. Not only that, all of you people are going to die in the desert. Dig your graves on Tisha B'Av, disaster. What does Moshe Rabbeinu do? Nothing. He doesn't pray to God. Now already Korach sees Moshe's popularity is dwindling. Now already people say, hey, what's going on with him? Moshe, handle it. You know, this is the Egel number two. Go to God. Pray. All of a sudden Korach saw a weak spot. Korach saw now Moshe Rabbeinu is vulnerable.
Timing.
Now, exactly. So now he said, this machloket now, I have a chance to gain support from the people, which he's now they're not going to side with Moshe. Now already Moshe just came down with news, everybody's dying in the Midbar, no one's going to Eretz Yisrael. Oh, Moshe, but you're going to handle that, right? No, we're not handling nothing. That's sealed in blood, it's finished. What? That's Moshe Rabbeinu? So now, you don't like the Ramban, Charles?
No, it's fine.
So he says what? He says what? That at that point he thought he'd be able to get him. What's the Musar for us? So the Rabbeinu Yeruham brings Musar from this Ramban. He says, look at human nature over here. He says, amazing. Look at human nature. Who asked to send spies? The Jewish people asked to send spies. Moshe Rabbeinu said, you know what? You don't need to send spies. Shelach lecha. If the people want to send, Moshe Rabbeinu says, right, I'll send for your sake. Who came back with the bad report? The spies. Who accepted the bad report?
The people.
The people. Who cried? The people. Whose fault is it? Moshe's. That doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. Look at human nature. He says, they did everything wrong. It was their fault on every single account. And then, what are they doing? They're pointing fingers at Moshe, you didn't handle it. I didn't handle what? I told you don't send the spies. I told you don't believe their report. And I told you don't worry about it. You didn't listen to anything. And after it backfires and blows up in your face, you come to me and say, oh, what kind of leader are you over here? You didn't handle it over here. Oh, you're not the guy. Caught out, let's go. Let's fire the guy. Fire the guy? Where's your responsibility? So the lesson over here is, which we see today in our time as well, our generation, the hallmark of our generation is no one takes responsibility for anything they do. Which means today a guy could become, you know, a serial murderer. And, you know, in his court trial say, well, you know, it was my mother's fault. You know, because when I was 6 years old, you know, my mother embarrassed me in front of my friends, and you know, I got this is the generation of therapy. You know, everybody's in a certain type of therapy, trying to blame their own weaknesses and their own faults on society. Everybody's pointing fingers, which means, you know, it was my teacher's fault. I had a teacher in eighth grade. I failed the test, and she failed me. And I didn't deserve to be found. I was broken because of that. You know, I was never able to recover. So what do you expect? So I had to go, murder six people because, the teacher. You hear this going on in the courtrooms over here. Where my friend's fault. Society is to blame for the criminal. Our generation, even when you hear public officials that commit wrongs. They'll get up and say, you know, chairman of the board who embezzled $400 million from a company, so he'll get up at a press conference and they'll say, mistakes were made. Mistakes were made by what? By an invisible man? Who made the mistakes? Which, as if, you know, there's some guy out there that's separate from the person that makes mistakes, but it's got nothing to do with him. He just is there reporting mistakes were made. You know, where's the guy get up? I made mistakes. I did something wrong. The generation does not take responsibility for its actions. Does not confront its own weakness. That's exactly. It's not a new phenomenon. This is already from the times of the Midbar. They sent the spies. They accepted the Lashon Hara and they cried. And what did they say? If we had a better leader, this wouldn't happen. It's not Moshe's fault. But here you see, Rabotai, you have to accept responsibility for the actions. A person does wrong, he has to accept it. You know, it's been said that God can only do wrong. What does that mean? So when a person is successful, what does he say? Look what I did. When something goes wrong, what does he say? Kapara. God can only do bad things. But when it comes to the good things in life, oh yeah, look what I handled, look what I did. All of a sudden he loses some money. Borei Olam, kapara. Oh, that's Borei Olam. Yeah, Borei Olam doesn't know how to make money. He only knows how to lose money, God. That's the same concept. Say, you're pointing fingers. You know, this is God's fault. This is the other one's fault. The person has to take responsibility. You have to teach your children that as well. They make a avon. They have to confess. Hatati aviti pashi. That's so basic in our tradition, the vidui. What is the vidui? The vidui is hatati aviti pashati. The vidui is, it was me, I sinned, I transgressed. That confession is so basic, one of the basic tenets of our religion, because it breaks that human nature to point fingers somewhere else. We'll say one last chiddush, Rabotai, then I'll let you go. Which last chiddush am I going to tell you? Oh, I'll tell you a nice chiddush. Yeah, you want more.
Where are you going?
So what happens is like this. The irony of this story of Korach and Moshe Rabbeinu is truly fascinating. And you see, this happens a lot of times. Moshe Rabbeinu, the Torah testifies, the most humblest of men. There's no more humble man than Moshe Rabbeinu. Now, this is not Moshe writing about himself, chas v'shalom, nor is it another human being sizing up Moshe Rabbeinu's character. This is God, whose standard of humility is the pure, unadulterated version of humility. And he's testifying, Moshe is the real Makor, he's the real thing. Ish Moshe Anabeon. And Moshe Rabbeinu, if there's anything he didn't want in his life, was to be the leader of Klal Yisrael. You remember, there was a 7-day debate between him and God. God's telling him, Moshe, you gotta go do it. No, he sends Shalach Nabiyat Tishlach, send Aharon, send somebody else, not for me. I don't know what you can debate for 7 days exactly, what the dialogue back and forth could be for 7 days. But to me, it's about, look, go, don't go, yeah, no, yeah, 5 minutes, it's the arm wrestle was over. Here, it was 7 days of Moshe Rabbeinu shying away from what? From being the leader. And ironically, what's Korach's claim? You're a power hungry man. You know, you're a megalomaniac. You know, you're grabbing. Who are you talking to? It's Korach. Listen how illogical your argument is. You want to go against Moshe? You're talking illogical. At least make up a different claim. You know, it's so obvious that Moshe Rabbeinu is exactly the opposite of what you're saying. He's the antithesis of power hungry. He's the antithesis of somebody that wants a glory. So Korach, even for your own sake, if you wanted to be, let's say, successful, it come with a different claim where at least the people might say, yeah, maybe Korach's got a point. But to come along and say something that was so obvious, what was Korach thinking? So the explanation was, Korach wasn't thinking. Why? Because he got angry. And we have a rule. Once a person loses his cool, and he gets angry, so now already you become blinded, and now you'll say the most ridiculous accusations. To come along and claim that Moshe is seeking superiority, that Moshe is involved in vanity. It's ridiculous. But the lesson is, a man that's being driven by anger, he'll strike out indiscriminately and say the most outlandish things. And maybe that's why, Rabotai, what's Moshe Rabbeinu's answer to Korach? After Korach laces into him, he says, Shim'una b'ne Levi. Listen, sons of Levi. Moshe Rabbeinu right away saw Korach was illogical. He's not a rational guy. Moshe was, I can't talk to Korach. If Korach is claiming against me that I'm kabod and arrogant, nothing to talk about. He's not, how could I answer a man that's not working with rationale? So what did Moshe try? Please, Shimon ben Levi, the guys around him, he figured maybe they're a little more objective at this point. You know, since they're not the ones that are heading up the machloket yet, fellas, does this make sense to you? Shimon ben Levi. Listen to what the guy's saying. Is this normal? Obviously this man over here is irrationally being driven by anger. That's why he addressed his comments to the people that were around Korach and not to Korach himself, because he thought he'd be able to be more effective by speaking to the objective ones. The lesson being that if a person wants to be effective and be able to impress upon people his opinion, you must do it b'yishuv adat. You must do it with tranquility and serenity and peace of mind. Even in the machloket in Torah, when a person also gets hyped up, mistakes start to come out of his mouth. Things that are not proper come out of his mouth, that are not, following the laws of logic. And that's what happened to Korach. A smart guy, but once the anger took over, he became so ridiculous that he turned the most humble of men in the world into the most arrogant man in the world. And maybe that's what Moshe tells the people after. Ve'aharon mahu kitalinu alav. He says, what do you want from Aharon that you're complaining about him? Right? Aharon, what do you want from Aharon? Leave Aharon alone. What do you want from him? So I heard an explanation like this. He was saying, Korach, your claim against Aharon that was arrogant, he's power hungry, It's an explanation of the Gemara says there's three ways you can tell a person. What are the three ways you can tell who a person is? Kiso, koso, kaso. Kiso, touch his pocket. Now, start putting your hand in his pocket, then you see what he did. Before that, the guy's a very decent, cordial guy. Good morning, how are you? Can I borrow $1,000? Hey! Oh, the guy flips out, you push the button. Koso, kiso. Or koso, drink. Give a guy a few drinks, Shema Yisrael. Now already you see all the secrets come out of him, all the garbage that's hidden up, that's locked up in there. But what's the third way to judge a guy? Step on his toes. Gaso, get him angry. Cut the guy off on the highway. Oh, and then you see what the guy's made out of. You know, when everything's shalom, everybody can act cordial. All of a sudden, you know, cross the guy. Oh, now you cross me. Now you see the guy. He turns into a violent animal. Moshe Rabbeinu was saying like this to the people of Korah. Listen, Aharon is a Kohen. The Kohen really has no share, doesn't make a living. He's subject to the people. So you can't really judge Aharon Bekiso. You know, Aharon really has no assets of his own. To judge Aharon Bekoso, well, he's a Kohen. The Kohenim are not allowed to drink. So the only way to really judge Aharon's character is Kaso. So you want to see who Aharon was? Test him. Confront him. You know, instigate him a little, and you'll see who Aharon is. The Aharon Mahu, you want to see Aharon, who is he? Kitalinu alav. Go complain against him. Go, you know, nudge him a little. Go, you know, fight him a little, and then you'll see exactly who Aharon is. Korah, what are you talking? You're claiming he's a bad guy? You're claiming he's a power? Go ruffle him a little, and you'll see how Aharon will still remain cordial. He'll still talk nicely to you. He'll still answer you in a soft way. And what do you see, Korah? You're wrong. Your depiction of Aharon is all wrong. The Aharon Mahu. You want to know who Aharon is? Kitalinu alav. Go, get him angry. And you'll see that your personification of Korah, Korah to Aharon, is really very warped. Why? Because of the anger. Because he let himself get unruffled and unraveled. That already caused him to say some of the most outlandish and ridiculous statements towards Moshe. And that's the irony. The most humble of men can be, you know, indicted to becoming, and truth is, that's probably the test of the humble man. Because it's probably that does not get you so angry, then the item that you're doing, they get you on. Because if a guy comes along and says, you know, you speak Lashon Hara, it doesn't bother you so much, because you know in your mind, you probably do speak Lashon Hara. But let's say you're careful on a certain mitzvah that you've been doing it for 50 years. That's your item. And a guy comes along and says, hey, you don't know that mitzvah. Oh, hey, now already you push the button. You know, if anything, this is the biggest proof that Moshe Rabbeinu was the most humble man. We have to give thanks to Korah. Korah, you proved what the Torah said. Because till now, you don't know Moshe is the most humble man. We have to take the Torah's word. But now you know how you know it? Korah comes along and says, you're not a humble man. Now, tell a guy that worked on humility for 80 years that you're not a humble man. Right. You're going to react from the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu says, Dachila, Korach, what are you saying? But even that, you didn't get unruffled? You proved to us that Moshe Rabbeinu indeed is the most humble of all men. Baruch Adonai L'Olam. Amen. Amen.